five, four, three.
This is episode 30 of a podcast without a name.
That's right. This is episode 30, take 10 million of the podcast without a name.
Major technical difficulties today.
Yes, major technical difficulties. It's been a while since we've had a cast. All three of us are here this evening. Congratulations to us.
That is true.
Yes. And yes.
Good morning.
The podcast gods are doing everything in their power to not let us get this cast in, but by golly, we're going to get it in.
We will do this.
Yes, we will. Somehow, some way, we will get this podcast.
By the way, we're only on minute 90 of trying to get this going, so it's been good.
Joe's countdown to the introduction was one of the most enthusiastic things I think I've heard in a long time.
Woo!
Yeah, three, right, two.
You had no idea how much energy I had to kind of pull from somewhere for that after take 10. It's been probably a couple months, if not longer. But we are here. We did not abandon the podcast. We are happy to be here. We have a lot to cover. First, we need to talk about what we're drinking this evening. I feel like I'm in Groundhog Day. I'm drinking a Corona. I'm about to finish it, and I'm about to open up a Leinenkugel Oktoberfest. So, Rich, Anthony, what are you guys drinking this evening?
I'm drinking a Hanalei out of a clear glass.
Nice.
Woo, I like it. Yeah, right down to business. Rich.
Yeah, right to business, guys.
I didn't drink anything, but I smoked a little bit of pot earlier. So
Which is fitting for our topic. This one of our topics this evening. We'll get to that in a minute. All right. So a lot has happened. Let's just cover down some of that real quick. We're not going to jump into these in depth, but it's worthwhile to kind of recap what's happened since our last podcast. John McCain passed away this past week. He was 81 years old. Much respect to him. He's been through a bunch of shit, and he's finally resting. NFL season starts this week. Yay. And the Philadelphia Eagles are still the Super Bowl champions. Just want to make sure everyone knew that.
Yes, they are.
Justice Kennedy retired. President Trump nominated Brett Kavanaugh, which is funny because we talked about the SCOTUS stuff on our last cast and how important it was, and then Justice Kennedy retired after that. It was kind of timely. Anyway, Trump-Putin summit. Yay. Soccer team in cave. The Thailand cave. Soccer team went there for some god-awful reason, and now they are saved. Big drama for a while. CNN was breaking news for like 3 weeks straight with that. Catholic priest sexual abuse case out of Pennsylvania. The attorney general issued a report outlining 70 years of sexual abuse cover-ups. Yay. No surprise there. Paul Manafort convicted of tax fraud. Michael Cohen pleads guilty to campaign finance violations, tax fraud, and bank fraud. The Cannabis Museum is set to open this month in Las Vegas with a 25-foot-tall, 800-pound bong called Bongzilla. And Rich is probably dreaming of that right now. Yeah, he's probably like, woo, if I had an 800-pound bong, what I'd do to it right now?
Bongs are for getting way too high. I
think. Yeah. And it's not just a statue of a bong. It's a usable.
Oh, it's a functional bong. Yeah, it's the world's largest. Yes. And you know what? That kind of is timely too with one of our topics this evening. I guess you're kind of getting the hints of what we'll be talking about so far. Next thing on our list here, the NYPD has a official beekeeper. And apparently it was called to a swarming of bees at a hot dog cart this past week. And the official headline was NYPD apprehends bees swarming in Times Square, which is great.
You'll never catch me, coppers.
That's pretty good. Not gonna lie.
There's Richie's Hot Dog and Chili Hut.
Yeah, there's
no
two takeaways here, right? The NYPD has an official beekeeper. I was wondering what type of weapon he carries. And bees like hot dogs, Rich.
Yeah,
could spend money, you know.
Perhaps
like,
you're marketing to the wrong crowd.
I gotta get one of those talking bees, like the bee movie, which was terrible.
I just picture a bunch of bees with like little tiny handcuffs on their wings or something like that. you know.
I can't imagine.
NYPD apprehended.
Yeah. I just can't.
I just wanted to be there.
I wanted to be the fly on the wall watching that. You wanted to be there? Right? I wanted to be there, but the fly on the wall. And you know, we're all about research here. So our last little piece here is research by scientists at Queen Mary University of London. They were able to provide the first evidence that goats prefer smiling human faces to grumpy ones. Ponder that one.
I think we all prefer smiling rather than grumpy.
You know, just roll that up.
Isn't like old goat like a term for like a grumpy old guy or something? Yeah. An old goat.
I mean, it's science though, so here we are. Anyway.
I like it. I like that.
You know? I'm not a comedian, in case anyone is wondering. So this is my really horrible attempt.
I think you're very funny. I know. Looking. And
comedic value is in the ear of Anthony.
We all laugh at Joe with Joe
at one of the above. Anyway, moving on to more serious stuff. We're going to talk about the legalization of marijuana, and what I'm dubbing as the slow march towards. I think we've gotten to a point. We've gotten past the obvious things like public opinion. I think all that stuff is squarely in the favor of legalizing marijuana. I think it's 65% or more believe it should be legalized. 90% plus believe it should be legalized, at least for medical reasons or other kind of niche reasons. But I think the court of public opinion is saying it's happening, right? And I think that's where we're moving. But, Rich is high right now, so he could give us a little bit of a straight up perspective on this, and then we'll get our takes on this, right? Like I think we all will probably agree to a certain degree. There might be some areas where we kind of depart on it. I personally am fine with it. I think, you know, it's just been long overdue. If, you know, we're drinking alcohol right now, and what's the difference? You know, like, there's really not much of a difference in terms of physical, you know, toxicity on our bodies. If anything, marijuana is probably a lot less toxic, especially if you're not smoking it, if you ingest it in other ways. I think we're just, it's about time. Do we agree on that?
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I mean, I think there's other caveats that end up coming to service with something like this, like such as, you know, certain things like operating motor vehicles or certain job place, regulations and stuff like that. I guess the testing procedures for if you're, you know, high on the job versus if you're drunk on the job are way different. You know, if you have an accident at work, they can give a breathalyzer and immediately know whether or not,
smell your breath. Like, oh,
yeah, or that, you know what I mean? But like, there's a level, whereas like, you know, with marijuana, you're kind of looking at, you know,
you probably have to pull blood
for a lot longer.
Yeah,
you could just be like, nah, man, that was totally like 4 days ago, you know?
Yeah,
but I wonder if they're going to be approaching people. I mean, like, why wouldn't the status quo just continue? Like, the people that were already smoking would just keep doing obviously they were getting away with it
to begin with. Yeah,
I
think this is just like, what we have to kind of realize too is we're coming at this from a perspective where we all grew up where marijuana was an illegal substance, right? Like, so when our first instinct, and I asked my wife about this earlier, and I said to her, do you support the legalization of marijuana? And she said, yeah, kind of. And I'm like, and then I started asking her questions about it, and we came to the conclusion that like the only reason why she was saying a lot of stuff was because she grew up with knowing it was illegal. So it was like, it was weird for her mentally to go, it's illegal, now it's not, right? Like there was almost like some sort of assumption there that if it was illegal, if the government said it's illegal, there must be other things about it that are just making it inherently horrible, right? When if you actually break it down, like, the facts about marijuana, like what it does in to the body and things like that, and all the other things that have been created around it, the industry that the black market has created around it, you quickly come to realize that it's not a very harmful substance to begin with, and all the negative things are because it's illegal. Like when it comes to the black market and stuff.
most things that in life, right? And I mean, I'm talking anything, like from alcohol to drugs to what, I don't know, different foods and substances that we ingest on a daily basis. Everything that we look at always seems to get worse for you, right? Like as time goes on, we know that, like, okay, if something comes out and says, I don't know, XYZ product may cause cancer, you know, we expect that in like 10 years from now, you know, research is to say it does cause cancer. You know, it's not, like everything kind of always goes in that way of it's bad for you. Marijuana was one of those things that off the jump, it was bad for you because it was a drug, right? And as time has progressed, they're showing how it's not as bad for you. It goes the opposite way of what we conventionally see with, you know, things like this. You know what I mean? So I feel like, you know, our brains don't really know how to decipher that. You know, we're like, wait, what do you mean it's not as bad as you once said it was? You know what I mean? Especially with the legality portion of it, you know, put in there, like you alluded to, you know, when something's illegal for our entire life, you're just prone to think it must be bad, right? Like it's a bad thing. So I mean, like, and especially, you know, we're all 30 somethings, 40, you know, like for 35 years of our 36 years of our life or whatever, we've been told that this is bad and this is not a good thing, and you go around sneakily, you know, doing it when you're a teenager and stuff like that, and now all of a sudden it's okay.
And it could have just,
so I think that's hard to wrap your brain around.
It could have just been
people.
Just as easily have been alcohol too, right? Like we could be talking today about the legalization of alcohol.
Absolutely. Well, and once this is legalized, you know, realize like generations in the future are going to be growing up in a world that it just is legal, we're going to be like, you know, back in my day that was illegal, you know, prohibition, you know, like we're going to be like talking about that, and they're gonna be like, why, what's, you know, what was up with that, you know? So it's interesting.
I could give some like anecdotal evidence in that I know if I was comparing marijuana to alcohol, you know, and alcohol obviously is legal, I would say that the way it affects me personally is like, you know, when I drink, I want to go out. Like I want to be amongst people and like do karaoke and shit like that. When I smoke, it's like, I want to stay inside because I don't like, you know, I have no desire to go out. Like, I just want to lay on my couch.
You kind of want to be a homebody.
Yeah. Like you don't want to go outside of your little comfort zone. So I think in a way that's good. You know, because of like safety reasons.
Yeah.
You know? And I know it's like dangerous to get in a car.
And full disclosure here, I know obviously Rich was smoking tonight, right? So, you know, but we're not like, I have smoked in the past, like plenty of times, and that's fully disclosed to my work, right? Like they know I don't anymore. They drug test. I've been drug tested. I've worked in my agency for 10 years now, you know, I've been drug tested probably 30 times. I'm not lying.
Wow.
In fact, about 2 months ago, I got drug tested 2 weeks in a row. And they say it's random. I call them bullshit. But like, you know, I think we all have experience with it in some way, shape, or form. I got to be honest with you. If I had the choice, I'd rather smoke than drink because I don't get a hangover from smoking. I never did. And to me, like I'd much rather have a more mellow and chill time wherever I'm going or whatever I'm doing, than like, I mean, I guess every once in a while there's a time and place, maybe because I'm older, it's not as much, but like to kind of like, you know, wild out a little bit and just go nuts. But you know, at this juncture in my life, I'd rather be just like, let's chill, dude. Let's order some food.
I always just feel like, you know, it was almost like the government's like stubbornness in a sense, or I know that sounds very generalized, but you know, some sort of like stubbornness there that like, hey, look, this has been illegal. We've said it was illegal for all this time. We've, you know, we've locked people up because of stuff like this all these years, you know, whatever has happened. And now we're going to say it's legal. What does the past precedence on everything say? You know what I mean? Like, where does all of that go?
So these are the questions that we're going to have to figure out moving forward. Some tough questions here is what do we do with the people who are already incarcerated and, you know, people who are serving sentences that have, you know, longer sentences because they have a previous history that might have been with marijuana. if we're going to make this decision, we have to come to terms with how we're going to approach those kind of sensitive topics. We can't just necessarily go, hey, this is all gone. Let's, start from the beginning and forgive a bunch of different sentences. Like, we'll have a bunch of people coming out of jail. And like, I mean, it sounds great. I'm sure there's certain people who are like, yes, great. The war on drugs was horrible anyway. Like, these people shouldn't be in jail. Like, I get it. But there's a lot of different impacts that might happen in something like that. Like you just suddenly suspend things and like all these people are having to reintegrate back into normal life. And it's just like, I don't know. There's just some,
and then I wonder if there's any, now this is just my ignorance, you know, when it comes to just legal stuff. Right. But you know, I wonder, is it possible that they're scared of people suing as well? Like for being locked up over things that, you know, were because of marijuana offenses, you know what I mean? And like, and then it changes. I'm assuming that there's a, you know, some sort of statute there that says like, you know, it was illegal then. So anything that happened in that time frame is, you know, I don't know. I don't know how that
so
works.
So generally speaking, the government has immunity for a lot of different things. Although we do see in certain scenarios where the government seemingly doesn't have immunity because like for officer involved shootings, there's always some sort of settlement coming down the pipeline. When after you have one of them, you could kind of assume it's coming. Even if the person who was shot was like justifiably shot, there's still usually some sort of settlement because like, oh, they shot too much or something like that. But what we're talking about there is usually in the civil realm. So does that open them? Does that open up the government to additional, some sort of lawsuits and stuff? I think it might. I don't know for sure, just because I'm not a legal expert. But I'd imagine that's something that at least has to be discussed. Like, okay, what does this mean for, you know, when it comes to litigation post all this? Like, are we going to have a bunch of lawsuits claiming all these different damages and all this taxpayer money is going to be thrown around? My guess would be that if you're going to have legislation that legalizes marijuana, you have to address all this and you have to say, hey, yep, Here's what this means. And I think the easiest way would say it's from this day forward, right? Everything that's going on right now, if you're incarcerated, it sucks. Unfortunately, you were acting within a framework when you did that stuff, and that framework included things that were illegal and not illegal, and you chose the illegal stuff. Therefore, you were still illegal and you still should be locked up and then moving forward, right? Because
that's what I was thinking too. Yeah, like people that like had like 1,000 pounds of pot were probably not nice people. No. You know,
they're doing some interesting stuff with that.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, if it's somebody, like, I could see letting people for just possession go, like, under a certain amount, maybe, with no other crime associated with that possession.
Yeah.
Like, I think that would be something to consider.
I wonder if it's a barrier that, you know, that's one of the major barriers, I think, that maybe has kind of prolonged the legalization or the federal legalization. You know what I mean? Like,
it's like we've gone so far, like, that type of thing.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? Like it's you know, and it's, you know, this particular question, like how do we fix all of that? You know what I mean? Like how do we, you know, go case by case on every single person that's incarcerated, look at, because like you said, it's not even just the people that were charged on marijuana related charges, right? We're talking about people that may have had, like you said, longer sentences because of previous offenses that were related to marijuana. People that maybe violated parole and were put back in jail because of marijuana. You know what I mean? Like things like that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think the easy answer, and I think the real answer in all this is it's from this date forward, everything back was done within a certain context and that's how we're going to proceed. I think the bigger issue though is socially, there's going to be some sort of drumbeat, if you will, socially. And, you know, I'm going to say on Twitter just because it's Twitter, but you're going to see everyone tweeting going, oh, well, it's legal now. These people need to be like, there's going to be this march to, oh, well, we need to start forgiving sentences. We need to start expunging like things like that. But it's like I think the most practical and the most sensible way forward is like, yes, we're at a different time. We're moving forward. Everything that was before that will remain, because then you're getting in all this like fuzzy area of like all that stuff, right? Like it's almost probably administratively impossible to even fix, right? So I don't think we need to do anything retroactively, but there will be a social pressure to do that. And
and just think of the man hours it would take.
I mean, and the social pressure, I think, is big though. Like that's a big thing. I mean, you're gonna have, you know, every single talking head in celebrity status, you know, putting foundations together to free people. You know what I mean? And you know, that puts pressure on, you know, A, just social justice warriors, and B, on the government really as well, you know, when it comes re-election time. So like, what, you know, there's eventually going to be some sort of change there as well, or some sort of movement rather. And I'd be curious what that would look like, because I think it's a lot more complicated than face value, you know. With all of that said, and here's a question that might be off topic, but we always hear about all the things that it's good for, right? Do you guys have any sorts of, I don't know, list in your head of what could possibly happen on the bad side of legalizing, other than obviously what we've been talking about with charges?
I think one of the big questions is like, what type of effect would it have on like a developing brain or developing children? I know that there's some research that supports, marijuana having negative effects on the development of the brain when it's consumed at a young age. But to be honest with you, I don't think that's any different than probably anything else. I think a lot of things have effects on a developing brain, and that's why you got to eat healthy. You got to have, you know, all that type of stuff. So I don't know.
A friggin' tablet has a more negative effect on a developing brain than smoking a pot when you're in high school or something.
Yeah.
Like that,
so I think what we're talking about there is we're just spinning our wheels. Like you could pick up anything and go, well, too much milk is bad for your developing brain or something. You know. Yeah.
And I mean, I feel like that's an easily, you know, negated issue, right? Because you could just like alcohol is, you know, you got to be 21 to drink. Well, you got to be 21 to smoke, or 18, or whatever it might be. You know what I mean?
But negatively,
yeah, I think that makes it reasonable, like a age.
Sure.
Like you have to be 21. That makes sense.
I don't have a problem with that because, you know, there are negative consequences to anything we ingest that's kind of like that's meant to be recreational like this, and it's probably more on the mental side than it is like a developmental or some, and you know, maybe I'm not characterizing it correctly because it could be physical too, but like you could become addicted to alcohol at a young age if you're drinking young, right? Like there's a lot of things you do at a young age that like you could get addicted to or become reliant on or set you down a different path because you're doing it all the time. Like, you know how kids are. We were once kids. You make stupid decisions, you do stupid things. Like, so if it's just like a free for all, like, yeah, I mean, you're going to probably find yourself on weird paths just by happenstance because you smoked that blunt because you decided to get on the wrong bus and you went to the wrong side of town suddenly, you know, or whatever, like the weird, like butterfly effect type of shit. Right. But like, so, you know, I think having a reasonable age like 21, I'd actually rather support 18. I think 18 should be for drinking alcohol too, just because if you're, you know, you're supposed to be an adult, and at adulthood you're supposed to have all your constitutional rights. Like everything is like, hey, listen, you're 18. This 21 bullshit. I think if you're gonna do 21 for alcohol, you gotta do 21 for everything, in my opinion. And like the other way around, like if you're gonna go to 18, everything's gotta be 18. I don't like this pick and choose and stuff because, hey man, I'm 21. I'm 18. I could vote. I could do all this stuff. But you're telling me I can't drink? Like to me, that doesn't even square with the Constitution. Like this, something doesn't make sense there. Like it just doesn't make sense, right? So I think it should be 18. I think because that's the legal definition of adulthood, and I think everything needs to be 18, unless we as a society decide it needs to be a greater number, right? Like 20 or 21 or something like that, right? And but I think it needs to be across the board.
It is funny. I mean that. There are so many things too. I mean, like with even you ever go to Home Depot and try to buy spray paint to like, you know, paint a chair or something like that. And they're like, well, you have to be 26 or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm like, oh, okay. You know, I'm just trying to paint a chair out back, but you know, okay. You know, it's funny. I mean, there's different ages for everything. I feel like, you know, depending on I guess the nature of it, but you know, with that said, yeah, I agree. I tend to kind of always fall in line with the idea of if you're old enough to go to war, you should be old enough to, you know, indulge in certain types of recreational type stuff. You know what I mean? But yeah, as long as, you know, there's a legal standpoint or a legal, you know, you're on the legal side of that, you know, but But with that said, again, you know, that goes into like the next generations where that's not going to, that'll be the issue for the next generations. You know, right now, I think people are more concerned. The people that are really, you know, getting involved with these movements and stuff like that are probably over the age of 18 at this point anyway. You know, so I don't think that'll even be, I think all that stuff will be settled out basically by the time the next generation comes to age, you know.
But I mean, you know, what they're going to have to deal with is like all these economic benefits, which will really suck, right? I mean,
of course.
Look right. at how much money there is to be made.
Oh, yeah.
With that industry. And you can kind of tell now with some companies making big time investments with like pot growing companies and stuff like that. Like the company that owns Corona just made like a $4 billion investment in this pot company from Canada. So, you know, and other companies are doing it too. So you can tell they know that it's coming. You know, they wouldn't put their money into something like that.
Well, this could be like, there's not many industries that get a second chance, right? Like, look at print paper, right? Like, I don't think there's going to be, like, if you were like, you know, the Philadelphia Inquirer, Washington Post, New York Times or something in like 1989, if you weren't starting a .com, if you weren't getting on a digital age back then, you were gone, right? Like, you're gone today, right? Like, the print industry went through horrible consolidation and stuff like that when the internet popped up, and it was because all these different print formatted news outlets weren't innovative. They weren't getting ahead of it. They weren't researching. They weren't getting on top of what's next. So I think tobacco is in a unique position because they're going to get a second shot at this. This is their second shot, right? They had, like, they're banking on people's addictions to keep them afloat for decades now, right? Like, back in their heyday, big tobacco days, like, it was easy because no one thought it was bad or they didn't realize it was bad or they didn't care at the time. And then it became more apparent with cancer and it became more and more. So it became like, almost now, we're almost to a point where, like, smoking cigarettes is, like, a turnoff. Like, you know, like, it's just not as many people. Like, you can't do it in restaurants. You can't do it in a lot of bars. You can't do it in a lot of places. So, right. I don't know.
The peer pressure element that we grew up to know when we were younger doesn't exist. You know,
yeah.
So it's uncool to smoke. And, you know, like, the whole dynamic around, you know, smoking and the advertisement of it is just dead. You know what I mean? That's a thing that in a couple of generations is gone, you know, but like you said, this could totally revive something like that.
This is tobacco's second chance. If tobacco can now become marijuana, like same business model, everything, they're going to get a second shot here and it's going to be big. That's why Corona's doing it. That's why all these different startups are popping up. Like, it's going to be big. Once it's good.
There are cigarette companies, I think, invest. I think Philip Morris invested money.
Oh, yeah. They better
man,
be.
Go yeah. pick me up a pack.
They
go
better
pick me
be
up a pack of Camel,
like,
Chronic.
Just throwing boatload. They got to be, like, at their bank, just withdrawal. I'm throwing it at weed. They just got to get weed plants, and it has got to get dollar bills, and it's got to be throwing it at it. Just smashing it and rubbing it again. Like, if they know what's good for them, big tobacco needs to become big weed. Like, and that's the bottom line. It's got to be, because cigarettes,
but they don't sell like cigarettes, so it's not like an addiction.
It's not, but I'm telling you, like, even like when, like, so nicotine is kind of an outlet for a lot of people too. Like, it's an addiction, obviously, but people smoke it when they're nervous. People tend to go to it when there's like some sort of extra stress or something, right? Marijuana is going to be that for a lot of people. It's not going to be acceptable in working situation. Obviously, it you know, messes up your judgment in some cases and stuff like that. But it's going to be the choice for a lot of things. It's going to, so if the, let's say the big tobacco doesn't take a risk in marijuana, this is just going to be another thing that's going to hit into their profits, right? So even if it's not wholesale, you know, puts a nail in the coffin for tobacco, it's going to be a significant hit on them if they're not involved in it. Like, so this is an opportunity for them to jump back in, and it's not like, okay, here's, because it's acceptable to smoke on your breaks, right? It's acceptable to do a lot of things with nicotine that is not, wouldn't be acceptable with marijuana. But this is an opportunity, like, you could be the InBev of marijuana, right? Like, you could be that if you're tobacco or Corona, right? Like, there's still is yet to be an InBev for marijuana. And
from what I heard, they're already starting to make like marijuana infused beer. I heard that.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny. Like with that, I was just gonna say, what do you think is more likely, the nicotine providers, you know, using, well, I shouldn't say using, they're all going to kind of play on the whole marijuana thing if it's completely legalized, but who will be more successful, the nicotine brands or the alcohol brands, working in conjunction with new, like, with marijuana based
probably
companies?
The alcohol, although, you know, it's tough.
But see, I mean, you know, I don't know. Could cigarette companies somehow develop like how they flavor tobacco, like little those like Camel Crush, like weird shit like that? I wonder if they could do something like
that.
I question
because just because of nicotine or cigarette companies' inability to advertise, I think they're at a very big disadvantage there, because, you know, you have beer companies, you know, that just have, I mean, an unlimited, like, infinitesimal, you know, yeah, I mean, way of advertising. So, I mean, you know, whereas nicotine, you know, cigarettes and nicotine, you're not allowed to, you know what I mean? So I think they already have a barrier right there.
I wouldn't be surprised if when the legislation does roll out to legalize it, that it does have restrictions like tobacco. I wouldn't be surprised at all. So I don't know.
I'm sure it will. It's going to depend on
and
the
here's
in general.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
No, you're good.
Yeah.
Oh, I was going to say, and here's something I was thinking about too. With legalization, what was I going to say?
Sorry, see, this is the negative totally effect of marijuana right here.
No, I just totally lost my train of
thought. Well, actually,
how would you like it to be made legal? Like, would you want there to be a federal ruling, or would you want to leave it up to states? Or could the feds just say, like, it's a schedule, like, create a new class of
drugs,
like,
it's
a schedule 5?
I'm going to be selfish here. I'm going to say federal. And there's one reason why for that, because I work in the federal government. So that means if the feds legalize it, then they cannot – my agency cannot – like, they have to treat it like every other, like, alcohol or something like that, right? If it's left to the states, the feds are going to continuously just shun it, right? And so that means some – it's still going to be, I'm going to be definitely banned from smoking marijuana. So yeah, I'd like to see the feds just say, hey, it's legalized, and then it becomes the law of the land. Right.
Right. Like the states, end of prohibition, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. And if the states want to like stand up to it and have like a, you know, constitutional convention and create an amendment to the constitution to overrule the federal government, which I don't think is going to happen, then they can. Right. So, because the states are leading the way on this anyway. So I think,
yeah,
I think I was sure let the states do it, because that's like kind of like the, you know, patchwork way of getting to it. But if the feds do it, that's to me the ultimate goal in all this, because then no one has any sort of excuse anymore. Like, oh, why is marijuana illegal in your state? Well, it has to be, by the way, bro. It's federal.
That would be so nice to be able to like, just like grow a couple plants in your backyard, like everybody just having a good old time.
Listen, you're too idealistic here, man. You know this is going to come with a bunch of caveats. Listen, it's going to happen. I'm telling you, in our lifetime, probably within the next 5 to 10 years, we will have legalized marijuana. The problem is, it's going to come with a shit ton of caveats, and you know it. It's going to be.
You think it's going to be 5 years that long?
5 to 10 years. Maybe
Trump said he would sign something.
If Trump said he would sign it, I would not be surprised if it was sooner. I wouldn't be like, oh, that's a surprise. But if you told me in like 7 years it happened, I wouldn't be surprised either, right? So I think it could be as easy as like next year or as easy as 10 years, right? So I think but it's happening. That's my
look how much he would stand to benefit, Trump, if he legalized it.
Can
I mean,
you imagine if
business
Donald
would
Trump
be booming. It would be like his.com, like you said. Like,
oh God, imagine if Donald Trump was the president that finally legalized marijuana. That would like totally drive some hardcore leftists totally insane. Absolutely
insane.
Yeah,
that would be. Yeah, that would be awesome.
Because that's been like on their list of things to do for the last 50, 60 years, like if not longer. And it's like, Donald Trump was the one who did it, right? Like,
I feel like that would cause chaos. Yeah, you know what I mean, that would be like some sort fire. Of like internal like yeah. short circuit, you know, like
spontaneously combusting people.
just think of like the amount of prosperity.
I hate Donald Trump. I love Donald Trump.
It's to be like a zombie apocalypse. A bunch of liberals is like, oh my god, we're off the rails. Anyway. Oh, you know what I wanted to say? I wanted to say something about, like, we talked about it, sorry, but, like, a negative impact of marijuana. The only thing I could think really negative of it is the format for which you ingest it. I think the smoking thing, we need to get past that with marijuana, because it's a lot easier to THC in other things and not just the smoking format. I know as soon as it's legalized, you're going to walk outside, it's going to be a puff of smoke everywhere, right? Like, everyone's going to smoke, obviously. But that whole industry just breaks open because you could use it in so many different things. You see even in the black market, like brownies and shit like that and the gummies and stuff. Yeah. But, like, in, like, markets like California and, like, Seattle and stuff, you see all these different formats. And it's going to be interesting. And my wife brought up a concern with that was the thing with alcohol is, when you eat or consume something with alcohol in it, it's pretty apparent. Like, you know it, typically, if there's any sort of significant amount of alcohol. So, like, it's easy, like, if a kid, like, picks up a beer, they're like, oh, this is my apple juice. They're going to drink, that's not my apple juice, right? But if they pick up a gummy bear and eat a gummy bear, it could have THC in it, and they're not going to know the difference.
This is actually going to be my next point is, you know, I wonder how much fear there will be. I guess that comes up to the parents, but like, there's going to be a lot of fear as to like accidental ingestion of it. You know what I mean? Like, which
is
know,
like,
obviously when you're,
let's be real.
But the good thing is that the worst case scenario,
but is that the worst case scenario for, like, if my kids just happen to smoke a bunch of joints and chill out for like 5 hours, am I really like, let's be real, guys.
I mean, if there's, I hear you. I mean, if there's developmental concerns,
yeah, the developmental really, side, yeah, obviously. An issue. Yeah. We joke about it, but true, sure. If there's like some legitimate medical concern of a developing brain of like a 9 or 10 year old or even younger that happens to consume this, my guess would be that if they consume it by accident once or twice, it's not going to be a problem, right? It's just going to make them sleep a lot and maybe eat you more out of the home than they already do. But like my guess would be that if kids just end up being able to get it on a more consistent basis, maybe at young adulthood, maybe preteens or teens, and then like if there's some sort of developmental issues there, or like the gateway drug thing. I know that's somewhat of a myth, but there is,
alcohol is the ultimate gateway drug.
Yeah, man. And like, there's truth to that, right? There's a little bit of truth of like these like vices in people's lives that put them on certain paths. Like, it might be more like a personality disorder thing than anything, but there is something to be said about putting them on paths based on like exposing them to certain substances and feelings and stuff like that. So, I mean, there is a little bit of a debate to be had in that area, but I think at the end of the day, I think the science will continue to tell us how marijuana isn't that bad for us. It's not nearly as bad as alcohol. It's not nearly as bad as a lot of other things that we're consuming in our lives. Let's just not smoke it, because anything you smoke is not going to be good for your lungs.
If like it overtook alcohol, if everybody just started getting high instead of being drunk, like, dude, how peaceful the
there'd
bar
be no
would
bar
be,
fights anymore, you know? Like, I don't know, it'd be like a different world, man.
And what would Super Bowl commercials look like, honestly?
A guy napping on the couch,
what's up, dude? Football Fritos. Might go away, like, Snickers. Imagine what when being at a stadium like, would be like, get your weed here, like, it'd be like, you just like everyone would be sitting down. It'd be like fourth and goal, 2 seconds left, the Super Bowl. You're down by 3 points. What do you do? And everyone's gonna be like, I don't care, man. I'm just happy to be here, dude.
Yeah. Like, well, Snickers right now is like, you know, going for like the hangry type people, you know? It's going to turn into like, need a Snickers? Yeah, man.
Absolutely. Definitely. And some Funyuns, dude.
And some Funyuns.
Like, I don't know.
Another thing I never get.
I just picture a world of half-baked. Like, just... Remember, Anthony, back in the day, we watched that movie, like, every day, the one summer?
Yeah, man. I had the VHS.
Yeah. Jim Brewer.
It was a good movie. Hilarious. It was a good flick. Yeah.
Yeah. I follow him on
Facebook.
Well,
Jim Brewer, like, made that movie. But and Dave Chappelle, you know what I mean? That was, like, the
beginning
of his
Chappelle,
career,
Brewer.
You know?
God, there's some other
big
names
in there,
too.
Yeah. They were funny.
But Jim Brewer, man, like, you got to follow him on Facebook. He's still a funny dude. And his big thing, he loves the Mets. So sometimes it's hard to check out his videos because he talks about the Mets a lot. Unfortunately for me, the Mets suck right now. But
yeah, but that dude is like naturally stoned. Like he just, oh, yeah. He, it just like his look just looks like he's,
I'm pretty certain he was
whacked,
like,
out of his mind.
Yeah, when he came out, he had a joint in his hand and he was like, "Ma, just leave me alone. Like, I want a pizza." So
he played the perfect part.
Yeah. So yeah, man, marijuana, man, it's gonna happen. I'm telling you.
It only took us that.
We sound like a bunch of stoners here.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I don't even smoke.
No. I don't even smoke either. Yeah. Rich, you gotta. We're living through you right now. So, hey, man.
Sorry, guys.
So we might have some time for one more little topic if we want to jump into something. But I think we beat the marijuana thing to death. I think it's happening. I think we all agree with that. I think we all also agree that it's not a bad thing. I think it's just a good thing, right? Like, whether it's economically or, like, even on the physical side of things, if people are addicted to pot, I'd rather them be addicted to pot than alcohol. But pot's not addictive. So, you know, we're just spinning our wheels here. Anyway, so unions, or I don't know. What do you guys want to talk about? Union, student loan debt, or the stigma of mental illness? What do you guys want to talk about?
I went on a little rant on our page about
the unions, right?
Teachers' unions.
And I thought that was great. It got a lot of good engagement. So maybe let's talk about unions, man. Do you want to sum up what your rant was, Richard?
Yeah, just that teachers shouldn't be unionized because they're there. The importance of their profession and what they do, like, doesn't really fit into the mold of what a union, I think, should cover, you know. Mm-hmm. And it just handicaps schools by having to pay the teachers, you know, higher salaries than sometimes, you know, they deserve. And it, you know, causes them to have, like, you know, to cut programs and, you know, facilities and stuff like that. So it's, you know.
So I think there's a lot of truth in your rant, and I'll even link to it in our show notes for this episode so people can read it directly if they want to. But there's a lot of, like, data on this. And I think if you look at the quality of, like, say, schooling and stuff, I'm not knocking on teachers here, but generally speaking, private schools are better than public schools. And usually private schools are not unionized. So there's something to be said about that. There's something to be said about markets and that, all of that. Here's the thing that I struggle with when it comes to unions and public service employees in particular. I'm a public service employee. I don't have a union, but a lot of my benefits and a lot of stuff that I actually get are based on other federal worker unions that have carved them out, right? So there's a little bit of a externality there that I'm party to. Generally speaking, I think when it comes to a typical market, let's say bakers or something like that, or roofers or something like that, I think there's a market there to help regulate these things like there wasn't in the past. Like back in the day when these things were formed, the flow of information was not nearly as fast as it is today. Like today, if, like, someone gets killed on the job, you're going to know about it. It's going to be quick. It might be on social media before even the news. So I think the market has a natural way of like, coming to an efficiency when it comes to this stuff. There was a time in the market where it needed unions to get us somewhere, right? And now we're at a time where communication is so fast and things are so transparent and in the public sphere now that I think the market regulates these things really well. Like, we talk about the baker and for the gay wedding a lot, right? This is a really good example of that, because you have what appears to be a social wrong. Although, let's acknowledge that there's some nuance there that might not necessarily play to this narrative, but let's just assume it's the easiest Huffington Post headline. Baker does not want to bake a cake for a gay couple because he's Christian, right? We know there's nuance there. That's not necessarily the exact case, but, like, what happens in this situation is Twitter gets it, Facebook gets it, you know, Google News gets it, iTunes News gets it, or iOS News gets it, right? Like, everything gets this, and suddenly the market knows that here is a business that does not want to cater to a certain segment of our public. And you know what? We have the power of the dollar, and we could put that business out of business. So I think there's a lot of functions there, like when it comes to labor laws. Like, if Starbucks was not paying their employees a wage that's, you know, consistent with the type of work they're doing, people would know about it, and people might not shop at Starbucks or eat at Starbucks or anything like that, right? There's a lot of things that the market can fix in these situations, but when it comes to public service, that's harder. Like, there's not really a market for policing, right? Like, we don't necessarily go, like, there's not necessarily this, like, overall database or, like, a Yahoo or something like that for policing, right? Like, or like bus drivers even, and to a certain degree, some of them are public, some of them are actually private, but there's certain things that aren't necessarily as transparent or like easily understood in a public sphere for a market to regulate. We don't necessarily choose. Now, yes, we pay taxes, right? That's usually just kind of like a happenstance of where we decide to settle. So it's not like we're going, I'd rather have my tax money go here because this police force is better than this police force, right? Like, so I think in that regard, the market isn't there for public service employees. And I would extend that to a certain degree to education system, although there's a little notable difference with our education system, even if it's public or private. You could actually rate institutions that are they're public institutions. Like, you know the quality of students that come from those institutions. Usually that's a reflection of the type of curriculum and the type of teachers they have in those institutions. So there's a certain way of actually rating public institutions to look back on and go, oh yeah, I'm not getting a good bang for my tax buck here. Right? Like, so I think that there's still a niche need for unions, whether it be first responders or something like that. And maybe to a certain degree, I think I could be convinced that public education might still need unions. My big thing is there's markets for a lot of this, but not for public service people.
I see most of the biggest power in unions, I feel like, are in like skilled trades, you know what I mean? And things like that, where you have big contracting organizations for electrical, for plumbing, for other types of trade type work. You know, what I've seen over the, you know, years in my own career, I guess, is that, you know, the company at this point, the lawyers are better than the union lawyers. You know what I mean? And what ends up happening is the company lets go what they know that they can leave on the table and basically just kind of cater to your union in a way of like, yeah, look, this is what we were going to give anyway, but here, we'll make it look like it was their idea kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like, that's what it almost like looks like to me. But I think on the employee perspective, I think employees find it. So, you know, in most employee-employer relationships, the employee always feels like, A, their voice isn't heard. They have no representation. It's the man versus them. You know what I mean? And I think the unions kind of bridge that gap where the employee kind of feels like, you know what? I have a voice, whether they do or not in actuality. They feel that they have a voice. They have representation if anything ever was to go bad, you know, from the company trying to, you know, screw them or something like that. So I think it's more of a comfort. You know, knowing that exists, or that, you know, these people are here on your side. Yeah, but it doesn't really work that way anymore because they're not as powerful as they used to be in most cases. In some cases, they still thrive. You know, it depends on the strength of the union itself. But, you know, what's also happened is the unions themselves have become corporations of themselves, basically. You know what I mean? Like, these are, you know, profit driven organizations in a lot of cases that are, you know, taking money that's supposed to be used for, you know, arbitrations and things like that. And they're using it to make themselves bigger and, you know, play into the whole politics game, which is usually for personal gain. So, you know, there's a lot of corruption that is involved with it that I think brings down their ultimate value. But at the same time, the employee that's engaging with the union feels that comfort level, and you know, maybe that to them is worth it at that point. Whether that means that it's worth it or not, I'm not so sure. You know,
I think the hard part that I like struggle with when it comes to unions is in a lot of these industries, in particular education, it is really hard to have a teacher fired. And you know what? That's even the case for federal agencies that aren't even unionized. It's hard to fire someone in the federal government. It just really is. So the problem with that is that that kills efficiencies, right? Like, if you have an underperforming person and you can't get rid of them, then that's there's a monetary loss there, right? Like, inefficiency.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, I hate to say it, but, I mean, I feel like the unions are usually kind of protecting the underperforming.
It's usually, they don't have to protect the performing ones, yeah.
The overachievers don't, the overachievers are usually the ones that get screwed, but they're usually the ones that end up leaving the union, whether they become like a foreman or a supervision type of, you know, managerial status type person, you know, but then they're almost viewed as traitors. I mean, it gets very clicky.
And then
from
you
what
have
you know?
the meeting performance requirements that are subsidizing all that stuff in their dues for the ones that aren't meeting the performance requirements. And I don't know. It's a sticky situation. There's some people very passionate about the union thing. In my opinion, there was a time and place for it. I think we've hit a point in time where communication and transparency is just, it's not like any other time in our history. And I think we're fortunate enough that we're, you know, markets can regulate a lot of stuff, even like whether it's roofers, you know, welding, you know, steel industry and like, you know, all that type of stuff. Like,
I think that's correct to a point. But I think where the unions thrive the most, and I think Rich really kind of nailed this with, you know, I think any sort of consumer driven type of trade, I think the consumer can kind of decide where they go, and the union doesn't hold as much power as it does within like more B2B type enterprises, you know what I mean, where you have, you know, let's say a contractor, you know, whether it be carpentry or electrical or plumbing or something like that. Like, these are large companies doing a lot of capital work, and it goes into your public works kind of thing. I mean, that's where they find the most value. Now, that still exists within that little ecosystem, I guess you could call it, you know what I mean? But you know, I think the businesses are going to kind of cater to the path of least resistance, which usually ends up being, all right, you know, whatever, we'll just use union and whatever. You know what I mean?
Like, I still think that, like, when it comes to the B2B stuff, that information and transparency still would really, like, in those markets, I still think it would have a pretty big impact. Like, for example, if, like, there are steel workers on high rises without, you know, the appropriate break time and they're falling off or they're getting injured, like, people are going to snap pictures, like, whether on the job or surround, like, it's like, I don't know, you'll have people protesting and stuff like that. Like, I don't know. I think that there's still,
it happens a lot though. I mean, the amount of safety regulations out there, even in other like lower tier unions. I mean, the term, like the blanket statement of the union doesn't really mean much. I feel like it's how good of a union you're in. Like, you know, there's no doubt that the safety practices of a very good union represented company versus the safety practices of a very either non-union or lower tier union represented company, the higher tier union is always going to have better safety practices, better equipment for safety involved with it. But I really think that's the biggest gain that they get is the safety, which is a big deal because they can't say no to it. You know what I mean? Like, they put the company in a position where they can't say no, you know, but then that when what we're talking about is, you know, how does that translate into non-trade type jobs, right? Like, not electrical or, you know, carpentry or, you know, plumbing. Like, what about teachers and what about, you know, food workers or, you know, I don't know, whatever it might be, you know what I mean? Like, how does that play into that? I'm not so sure.
Yeah. I don't know. There's just something about unions that, like the forcing people to pay dues, like, that bothers me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that got overturned. Well, not the dues, right? But, oh, no, that they don't have to pay dues anymore, right?
Well, it depends on what state.
Dues do.
What's that thing that Trump passed then? It was just for that one little union?
No, I don't remember. I don't know. I'm not quite sure what you're referencing. I mean, I know that
he signed something to say, like, you didn't have to pay union dues, like, if you didn't support your union's political beliefs or something.
Oh, okay. And yeah, that makes sense.
I don't know if that's a generalized across the board thing or not. You know what I mean? I'm not.
Well, there's
sure,
right to work states and stuff like that. So the right to work states. Yeah, you
it might have to do with the type of state.
Yeah. It's right now. It's largely
it ask me or something. I don't know. I forget the name of the decision.
I don't know. It's just a sticky topic. To be honest with you, like. I mean, am I going to sit here and say people are wrong when they say, hey, you know, like, look at all this stuff, like the 5-day work week is because of unions. Like, I think some of it's a little bit
overblown
a little bit, but there was a lot of things that unions achieved during industrialization. Like, there was a lot, right? And they were key and they were important back then. And I 100% believe that. I just think we've moved past them.
It's like the union is just like, you're paying like double per worker than what you would pay if you got a private company. Like, that's what it seems like sometimes. It's just like there are people that do a certain thing, but they get paid so much more than the average Joe doing it.
And and that's the thing where, like, I don't know. I think markets have a way of being able to do that to begin with. But you know what? No market's going to sympathize with the union worker that is getting paid double time on a weekend just to be on call. Right, like, I don't know, like, there's a lot of industries where that type of shit happens because a union was able to get that for them. And you know what? It's good for them, and they're going to fight to the death for that because the dude who's making $120 an hour just to be on call to fix something that might go wrong somewhere, like, they're gonna fight to the death to keep that income, right? Like, I mean, damn right. Absolutely, like, but... the general public's not going to sympathize with that. We're not going to say we're going to just, you know, I think that there's a little bit of like I don't know what you want to call it, like tone deaf in terms of like their approach to it. I don't know if you want to call it that. I don't know if you want to call it something else, like a little bit of disconnected from the rest of society and blue collar workers who aren't unionized. Like, you know, most people are working their 40 hours and they're getting paid probably somewhere between $15 to $25 an hour. And like, you know, like, that's the blue collar range. And it's like, and then there's this unions coming in demanding $60-something an hour or double time just to be on call. Like, I don't know. It's hard for me to empathize with that. Like, I don't know. It's hard.
Yeah. Yeah. And too, like, a lot of times they get a little clicky and like you have to know someone to get in one. And, you know, they're political entities in that way, just like in their local area. You know, like you have to know somebody. So, like for a lot of the unions,
you gotta know someone
anyway. Yeah, like I know the electricians is real hard to get into. I think you have to know somebody for that one. I think steam fitters, you kind of got to know somebody because those people, they make a shitload of money, like per hour, like you said, like double time or something. There, I think the highest rate of pay is like $85-something. So if they got double that, that's think how crazy that is.
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, I think on the consumer side, I think we see the fact that it, like, the consumer normally does choose basically by price, right? So, like, yeah. your like normal household work probably isn't going to be, you know, as done by like as much as by like a union versus a non-union guy. Why would somebody want to pay double, let's just say, to get my, you know, my driveway redone? You know what I mean? I think it really does matter a little bit more toward like industry type stuff, like capital work, but I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure I see the importance of it as much as it used to have back in the day, you know, but people do highly regard them and they're still a powerful presence in the workplace. So
it's true.
I'm kind of in between.
And we've come to the end. Episode 30 of the podcast without a name.
I know,
without
right?
the name. I'm surprised, you know what, man, like this 10th go worked out really well for us. I think
lucky number 10. They always say 10 times.
It's gonna create some fun times in post because I gotta piece together like 3 recordings here, but
I feel bad for that guy.
So we covered marijuana. We talked about some of the news that we missed over the past couple months. And then we talked about unions, which I wasn't as prepared to speak about, so I apologize for that. I'd be interested in anyone's take on that if they want to comment. Let me hear about it. I want to hear what you got to say. I have some you can impress upon me some opinions on this one because I'm not as read up on it. And I think that's probably the case for most of us here. Actually, with any topic, that's true, right? I mean, like, as much read up we are in anything we do, I think we're always open to hearing what people have to say about something or their opinion on something, or if they have some other research they want to bring to the table for us to consider. Do it. Bring it to us. Comment on our Facebook post. Find us on Twitter at No Name Podcaster. You could, you know, find us somewhere, man. Like, hunt Rich down. Find his house. Put a post-it on his door and be like, Rich, I think you were wrong about this. Stand, yeah, go to his hot dog stand with bees. Yeah. And, you know, buzz your way over there. Anyway, you can find us on I think we're on SoundCloud still, but iTunes, Spreaker, what else are we
anywhere
on?
You can find a podcast.
Jesus Christ. Anywhere you find podcasts, we will be there. And we're on Twitter at No Name Podcaster and Facebook at The Podcast Without a Name. We're the one with likes. There's one without likes. We are the one with the likes.
Yeah, everybody likes us.
Not a ton of likes, but some likes. Better than them, right? I mean,
what is it? Like, honestly, is it even in the double digits?
Oh, they're like in single digits, the other one, I think. We're in triple digits.
Really?
Oh, for yeah, likes? We're 130 likes, man. We're like, woo! Hey, man.
130 people like this page.
Living a dream.
How many are actually listening? Four.
45. Anyway, so that's Rich, cool. You know the tradition here. You have about 14 seconds to come up with the last word. So I'll give you those 14 seconds. Anthony, you could have about 3 seconds to say something if you want.
Hi.
Okay. And Rich, you got the last word.
I was going to just stick with our thing today and say prohibited.
It's a classic word.